Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of bread lines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Dress your observation in syncopation. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must be tense with common sense, or
Pins and Needles from the 30s brought us Sing Me a Song of Social Significance and a bunch of other songs, I think some of which I played some time back, but that's our opening song. What's going to give us a blast from the past with We Didn't Start the Fire by Billy Joel from Stormfront, which I had as theme song on this show for a number of years, late 90s, I think, thereabouts, but the disc has become old and worn and can't really be played properly. So, anyway, good morning to all you listeners, however many or however few you may be. As mentioned before, Peter Maron should be coming on in about 20 minutes. Actually, sorry, an hour and 20 minutes. He's due at 11. And we have some other treats as well, which we're going to be touching on things. I'll be giving a council update, because there is a city council meeting on Tuesday, a regular city council meeting. The four claims by three homeless people for $2,500 each for sleep deprivation is coming back on the closed agenda, but I believe they have already been rejected. Activist Becky Johnson, who is receiving these claims on behalf of homeless folks, has advised me that she's received notice in the mail, and I can't imagine there anything other than rejections, but well, that's almost a foregone conclusion. That usually is the first step before going to small claims court to demand the officer or ranger, whoever it is, the city employee who harassed the homeless person, deprived them of sleep on that night, answers for her or his transgressions, and the city's deep pockets hopefully become responsible for compensating that person. The chances of any kind of meaningful compensation at an early level are low to none, but the fact of the matter is these are civil rights violations, and that's why we're proceeding. Anyway, that's on the agenda of the city council, and I'm going to be, I guess what I should do initially is kind of very quickly go through some of the things have come up in the last week that might be of interest to listeners. Brent Adams, and the activist who's working with the Warming Center and the Sanctuary Village program, as well as the person who blew the whistle on Officer Vasquez's slam down of Richard Hardy 2 years ago in something that Brent videotaped, got to the Sentinel. But the investigation into this, so-called investigation by Chief Vogel or the Professional Standards Unit, has not had any palpable or visible consequences in terms of any changes in police policy that have been announced or any change in Officer Vasquez's status. So one has to assume that Santa Cruz, like the rest of the country's corrupt police forces, is not going to take action or didn't take action on this, or if it is, it's all very secret. There was at the last Public Safety Committee, that's the City Council subcommittee charged with overseeing the police department, which of course is sort of a bad joke, since they're really sort of the mechanism by which the police department presses for new legislation. or supports new legislation that gives them additional tools to harass poor people and to buff up their image and to, buff up their budget and expand their force. Last couple of years, this has been done through a combination of measures from the Parks and Rec, giving the Parks and Rec the stay-away order, expansion, a new law that makes interfering with the use of the park, very vague kind of term, a jailing offense, and a series of other ordinances involving making it illegal to stand on the median with a sign, a political sign, or a panhandling sign. And I've covered these laws on Santa Cruz Indie Media. If you go to indiebay.org, indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, one word, small letters, Santa Cruz, or just browse for Santa Cruz Indie Media, and then look for Norse, which is my last name, you can find some of the stories I've written about this stuff. Of course, you can also find interviews on the subject with the people who've been victimized by it, as well as by attorneys and other activists who've challenged it on archives of this show, which you can find on the Huff website. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, www.huffsantacruz.org. And you click on that and you'll go through, you'll find the back show. It's a little harder to find stuff in a organized and coherent manner on that website. My apologies, but someday it may get better. And if you'd like to volunteer to help on any of this, there is a number to call where you can leave your contact information. That is the Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom line at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Brent Adams, as I said, has... he's been involved in a variety of projects. I don't agree with him on everything he does, nor does he agree with me, so big deal. That happens. He is, however, he has announced a project where he has been going to different cities and doing something as simple as sleeping on a bench in a park to see what the reaction of the city is. He has emailed me that the warming center phases 1 and 2 will be ending at the end of March, and he'll be traveling to the Northwest to reside in various camps and villages while video documenting them and interviewing people. And he'll be investigating, doing a sleep-out investigation in those cities while he's there, and I look forward to hearing from him on those issues. He did talk about recently, on his Facebook page, going to Oakland, and other cities, but Oakland with a big backpack on, proceeding to the nearest park. I'm reading from his Facebook, or from a Facebook entry. I think it's a Facebook entry. I slept Thursday night at the park at Oakland City Hall. Brent writes, best night of sleep in months. They have 20 of the super wide benches with no dividers. They're meant to sit and sleep on. There were groups of rowdy dudes all around drinking and carrying on. I got in my sleeping bag and listened to the guys at the next bench. They were scary at first, but then I realized they were having fun. When I woke in the middle of the night, there were several people sleeping on benches nearby. I didn't see one officer. In the morning, from the comfort of my sleeping bag, I watched the people entering the bar at escalator by the hundreds. Many of them said good morning to me. In San Francisco, I had people approaching me all night, but they were harmless. No cops, no tickets. I'll be repeating the experiment in Sacramento, Santa Barbara, California, and other towns. And then, finally, I'll do Santa Cruz. What do you think will happen here? good work, Brent. Keep up the work on that, on those issues. Yeah, that's all I can say about that. On other matters... The SCRAM group, Santa Cruzans Against Resistance Against Militarization, has moved to exclude HUFF, the organization I work with, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, because of my participation in it. This is the report I get from two SCRAM members who didn't do me the courtesy of inviting me to their meeting so I could defend myself against whatever charges they have. When I tried to get an idea of what those charges were, I was told I had burned my bridges, I had used the wrong tactics. It was pretty vague, that it wasn't personal, but that it sounded like it was action. I've had some exclusion from different groups in the past for taking positions strongly to the left of those groups who are often trying to build bridges with those in power. And they're those who feel that's a good approach. I am often critical of that approach, particularly when it undermines leftist activism that is currently happening. So, for example, 25 years ago, when a lot of us were on the streets doing around the clock tabling to support the rights of homeless people to sleep, not anywhere and everywhere, but somewhere, the Coalition for a Safe Place to Sleep, headed by Margaret Marr and Sherry Connable, attempted a parallel organizing approach, which is fine, but they also attempted to exclude myself and other HUF activists as, quote, too radical. And they were able to get a couple of votes on the city council for their safe place to sleep in 1990, but it failed, and then they disappeared into the mists. HUF has not disappeared into the mists. We continue to do that. 1995, Connable and Barbara Riverwoman tried to, 96 actually, to establish a program for homeless people in the parks. This was after then-Mayor Rotkin, after destroying the Coral Street open-air shelter, the largest and longest tent city that Santa Cruz has ever had in the winter, in violation of promises made by the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, headed by Paige Smith, Paul Fotenhauer, Fred Gray. I don't know if Paul Lee was involved. I suspect he was as well. This is in the area at the back 40, which is now a place where they built the Paige Smith Community House out of the Homeless Lack of Services Center at 115 Coral Street. That organization, those activists were also engaged in a somewhat exclusionary effort. I don't know if I even tried to be involved with that group, but they have attempted to, these are good faith attempts to try to get some kind of relief for homeless people, but often it's done in a way that excludes and demonizes those on the left in an attempt to curry favor with those in the middle. And this happened again around the issue of when we had a mayor who was a Green mayor, Tim Fitzmaurice, in 2001, who was actually trying to criminalize the activists who were going after trying to get an end to the sleeping ban, campgrounds opened up, the same stuff that we're working on now. And we were enjoined from going to any kind of the city council offices by then-Mayor Fitzmaurice, and we attempted to bring up the fact that he was a Green Party member, and he was violating the Green Party pledge by not so much his injunction against us, which was political persecution, but, you know, that's sort of par for the course for frontline activists sometimes, often. But that he was violating the state Green Party pledge to end sleeping bans. He wouldn't even bring it up on the agenda. And those in the Green Party who had previously been allies, intent on currying favor with the mayor or on, you know, supporting the mayor against, I don't know, forces further to the right, which weren't really particularly in power. At that time, you had a pseudo-progressive majority that ruled Santa Cruz through the organization SCAN, Santa Cruz Action Network, for two decades, actually, from the 80s through the 90s and into the 2000s. And this has happened before, this kind of exclusionary stuff. It's too bad. Most recently, I think the reason that SCRAM is excluding us is I've been quite critical of SCRAM's narrow focus on the Bearcat issue, which I support them on. HUF's voted to support the Bearcat send it back resolution. I tried to broaden that to say, and we also are concerned because we've been doing protests against police profiling here in Santa Cruz, police use of force here in Santa Cruz, police lack of transparency here in Santa Cruz. And I have to say, I'm a kind of a lone voice on that, it seems, at the moment. Not entirely. There are others who support it, and I encourage people to call in if they want to talk about this issue. The HUF resolution specifically limits itself over my objections to simply supporting the Bearcat. And we also, in terms of this protest, and it's coming up on Tuesday, as I've mentioned before on the air, SCRAM has been coming to city council, and good for them for raising the issue, at each oral communications period of city council. I'm somewhat skeptical of the value of this as a continuing process, even though they've been promised to be put on the agenda in a kind of a ass backwards way 2 weeks from this Tuesday, where Don Lane, the mayor, will put on the agenda some how is the Bearcat to be used item. It's not about sending the Bearcat back. So, it's the sitting around waiting for the council to do good things is futile stuff. I've encouraged them to take stronger steps. They've declined, and that's fine. They do what they do. And I'm not really, a central person in that organization. But the fact that Huff's name was put on the literature by Keith McHenry as a supporter, we're a supporter of Scram, even though we're also critical of some of their tactics, but fine. Their objectives are good. But we, there are internal forces inside Scram, and I wasn't at the meeting, so I can't say exactly who they were, but... when I get that information, I can assure you I will tell you, because I think these exclusionary elitist tactics are not particularly healthy for those of us on the left. I really don't. And this is a subject open for debate. You can call in 427-3772. But only after you actually hear a real live show. That was a canned show. Again, I don't know who is insisting on playing Bathrob Spears broadside canned shows right before my live show. But starting now, we have a live show that, we're going to go from now until 8 o'clock. So stay tuned on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
The whole problem for only one reason that present raises a question. The homeless, our problem, for only one reason. Our president raises the question, who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Could it be 90 million dead Indians? Who owns the land? Could it be 6 million Jews? Who owns the land?
there's a flashback to, what, a year ago when I was playing that theme song repeatedly. That's Land by Five. Welcome to Bathroom Spears Broadsides. You are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, freakradio.org, at 101.3 FM. Still broadcasting as well as streaming, although we're looking for a transmitter site anywhere. Please call us if you have any place, like a second story or a tree or a low-flying helicopter, any place we can set up our transmitter. Please do give us a call. And us is, in this case, me. I'll pass on the word to the brainiacs at the center of Free Radio. Call me at 423-HUFF. That's the Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom line, which is also the main topic of this show, HUFF, at 423-HUFF. 423-4833 is the number to call. A word about what I found was playing when I came into the studio, which was my prior show and also apparently discussion of SCRAM, Santa Cruz Resistance Against Militarism's exclusion of HUFF from its flyer, which I guess, tempest in a teapot here, but I pretty much laid out my concerns. I actually raised the issue with a principal speaker, if not the main organizer of SCRAM, Sherry Connable, at the Tuesday City Council meeting 2 days ago. She refused to give me any more information, stating that their group had consents to have only one person talk to me about it. Although I did get one other honest man to acknowledge that he had voted or he had acted to have me excluded, and I appreciate his candor. That was Mike Smith of the Peace and Freedom Party. He didn't explain why. He just walked away with a smile. And there were several others who didn't. And by me, I mean that's what they regarded as HUFF. They regarded me as being HUFF. But actually, it was excluding HUFF from the SCRAM coalition. Ironically, of course, I spent the time in the front row with a SCRAM poster supporting ending the Bearcat, returning it to whence it came, or sending it to, perhaps we could see if it operates as a submarine when it arrives. In any case, no new information on that. HUFF did pass a resolution yesterday at its Wednesday meeting. Well, resolution might be a little... I think a number of HUFF members were pissed, to describe things mildly, at this very arbitrary decision by the SCRAM group. But we decided, that we let them know what we thought, I guess, and at least a number of members did. And we're moving on, because the real issue is not whether those middle-class liberals in leadership positions who are apparently, I'm wondering if they're not catering to Democratic Party hopefuls or Democratic Party power structure locally or whatever. Insofar as we can all agree, and we do all agree, that military equipment needs to be out of here, and what HUFF has been pressing for, what hopefully a number of SCRAM members agree to. Certainly some individuals in those organizations agree to this. There's a variety of organizations that have been clustered together as SCRAM, and so far HUFF has been the only organization which has had the honor of being excluded, or should we say put on the literature and then excised from the literature. We have a caller. Let's see who's calling in. You are on Free Radio.
Hello?
Hello there.
Hello, Uncle Robert. It's David Minton Silva here.
Hey there, David. What's up?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that, I was at a demonstration this week. There were a lot of SCRAM members, and they were very, very much supportive of HUFF. And I think that the SCRAM general membership would be very, very disappointed to know that their board is being so petty. And for you not to worry about it, Robert, know that you are loved, and there are people that appreciate you. Even if you do have the most obnoxious personality in town, there's a lot of people that really appreciate what you do.
Oh, you are so sweet. Well, thank you, David. Did you come away from City Council with any impressions? I know you did speak at City Council, did you not?
Yeah. Did I come away with any impressions?
That you want to pass on here on Free Radio?
They are masters of the art of sitting on their hands. And they really, really are. It's ingenious. It's incredible, fascinating to just watch how much they can talk and do nothing.
You observed the earlier city council meeting. I just got there for the oral communications period and for part of the SCRAM.
Yeah, I even spoke. In fact, there was one item that, oh yeah, the paddling, the issue about paddling, near the river and whether or not it disturbs birds and so forth. That was a pretty hot issue. And all of us spoke to it, and there's a lot of people that are defending the right of the homeless to be on the riverbanks. There were scram people, and, you know, people that you wouldn't, from that recent thing of Huff being excluded from scram. What pettiness. It's so silly. Gosh, it's like, you know, the old days in the 60s when the revolution fell apart.
Well, it's always been a problem with groups on the left. There's always a lot of factional fighting. I remember, David, you excluded Huff from meetings with Mayor Sugar back in 2000.
So. Oh, I did?
Oh, yeah, you did.
I was so sensitive to that poor asshole's needs, and man, was I taken as far as I was concerned.
So, you know, so you may...
Mayor Tim, you were a poor asshole.
Actually, it was Mayor Keith at that point, but Tim was also in the
one. Yeah, I was catering a lot to those guys. I helped get him in office, and man, I sure regretted it afterwards. But
once you get close to people in power, you know, it can be tempting to say, "Gee, if only I'm a little more moderate, if only I listen to them, then maybe I'll get what I want." And I guess sometimes that works, it's not something I like to do. When I see myself doing it, I say, "Wait, hold on, slow down, wait, hold on."
Well, I'm here to say to everybody that, you know, conservatives and radicals on the right have never really bothered me, but the moderates have, like, tortured my life.
Yeah, well, we appreciate your...
Hey, Uncle Robert, keep up the good work.
Hey, your phone call, David. Thank you, man. Bye-bye. And David, an ever-present and ever-loyal fan, thank you for calling in. And anybody else, loyal or otherwise, or anyone with some new reports on anything going on the streets, or on the riverbanks, or out on the Poganip, or that impacts the rights and safety and well-being of poor people generally, please do give a call, 427-3772. That's area code 831, 427-3772. And you're listening to Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. I'm Robert Norse, and we're going to be now listening to some interviews from today. Yeah, very current, at the library. And what was happening there was this is our second Sally on the sidewalk in order to, well, interest people in essentially taking their sleeping band tickets into small claims court with claims against the city because people are being deprived of sleep, which is a wrong, you might call it a tort. And it's something that we've been advised we can raise as an issue in small claims court to seek actual financial damages. And, you know, for the actually act of being deprived of sleep, that actually was the money was recovered, not so much for a homeless sleeping ban, a violation of their rights, but I think somebody else got their sleep interrupted, and they sued, and they won $2,500, or they won some sum of money, which we were advised should be the basis for our proceeding. And it's certainly a way of raising the issue with the people who are giving out these tickets like hotcakes. Not sure why giving out something quickly would mean giving them out like hotcakes, but that's... I like hotcakes, so maybe, I don't know, eat a lot of hotcakes, give out them out real fast, I don't know. In any case, today, as Raven Davis and Sherry and I were going over the Parks and Rec citations in the last few months, since October, almost every one of which is to a homeless person for a trivial offense like being in the park after dark or sleeping or perhaps having a dog off a leash. That's the number of tickets for sleeping and being in the park after dark far outnumber any of the other offenses that I've seen and what I was looking at today. Almost every ticket is accompanied by a new stay-away order for a day, but these tickets that I looked at are all before February 14th when, the city gave a sweet Valentine to its homeless community, which in essence said, we can now give you stay-away orders not just for a day, but for a week, a month, a year, and 6 months and a year as well. So that I'm really interested in finding out who, maybe they're not giving out these long stay-away orders yet, but the wording of the law, the new law that was passed, seems to mandate that kind of longer extension. In other words, if you've gotten a couple of sleeping tickets in the last year and a couple of one-day stayaways, if you've gotten three, your fourth one has to be for at least 6 months, a stayaway, and not just from the place they find you, but from all the other areas you were given citations in, even of the most trivial sort, and got stay-away orders for. That's the wording of the law. And we attempted to bring this issue to the Public Safety Committee on the 9th. That was on Monday. But the Public Safety Committee dissolved its meeting and didn't show up. According to Scott Collins, they had to reschedule for... I guess the reasons are not clear to me. He kind of bustled by in his brisk, clean, shiny suit, a new suit it looked like. Every day I see him, he has a new suit, it looks like. At least that's happened in the last couple of days. Saw him again today. Scott Collins is a staff member who is covering the Public Safety Committee, which is the committee of City Council that handles police affairs and fire affairs, and also is supposed to be looking at stay-away orders come September. That was the resolution that was used to sort of as a sop to those who are wondering, why are you harassing people for sleeping in the parks when there's no place for people to go and it's the shelters are all full and we're in the middle of a continuing economic crisis for people and people are being priced out who've lived here for years. Why are you doing this? And we heard people like Annalisa Cube, head of Take Back Santa Cruz, say, I'm not against sleeping. I'm just against bad behavior. But, of course, the bad behavior that they're ticketing people for and then giving stay-away orders for is sleeping, being in the park after dark, smoking, as though these are crimes worthy of these expansive and unprecedented banning orders that that are nowhere else in practice, anywhere else in the state that I'm aware of. Yes, courts do ban you from places and give you stay-away orders, but that is after a hearing. And that is after a conviction in a court. These are stayaways given by cops without any kind of judicial oversight or review. There is administrative oversight that was created when the ACLU squeaked up and said, wait a minute, that doesn't seem completely right after it allowed the last stayaway order for a day only, which was passed 2 years ago, to go through. Micah Posner also voting for it, the council member involved, this time voting against the longer stayaway orders. Anyway, we were checking that stuff out today, and we're going to continue to go through the citations to see what's going on. But it looks like it's heavily weighted. It's almost entirely homeless people that are suffering. It's almost entirely homeless people engaging in behavior that affects no one but themselves and doesn't even really affect the environment significantly. There's no claim that they're destroying the environment or abusing it or even littering, though we found, I think, one or two littering tickets. Of the hundreds or dozens of sleeping ban tickets that I've seen so far in the last few months here as we go through. This is just the parks and recreation rangers. The police officers who do the same in the same area and troop through, they give out a similar tickets and a similar stay-away orders. So there is a huge increase in harassment or continuation of harassment by authorities designed, I think, to... press and Take Back Santa Cruz, Pamela Comstock agenda. This is not a welcome environment for people without money, for poor people. Get the fuck out of here. If you don't, we're going to make it difficult for you. Whatever the Constitution says, we don't care. That's just what we're going to do. And if you want to help and document this, help and fight this, do give a call to HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, at 423-4833, which is 423-HUF. I was also at the, I did some documenting with a couple HUF activists, as I mentioned before, at the City Hall, but I also was across the street at the library, and that's what we're going to hear now. Library, and did some interviews with folks about their experiences, getting citations and so forth, and I'm going to be playing that now. And if you've got any experiences of your own you want to call in and talk about, you know about, or reactions to what's going on, please call in and we'll talk. Or at least I'll listen, and then I'll talk, and we can both talk. Let's hear the interviews. So I'm outside the library. It is March 12th, 2015. It's around 10:30, and this is the kind of Cafe HUF. We are gathering signatures, or I should say gathering claims against the city for those who have been awakened from their rest, given no legal place to go, and harassed because of their homeless status, masquerading under color of law. So that's what we're up to here. So have a seat, Hot Dog Man. We're talking with...
Oh, Ronnie.
And Ronnie, you're here because in front of the library because you heard there was a not only hot dogs but ticket collecting, take the damn city to court kind of stuff going on.
Yeah, I ended up getting a ticket for sleeping. Actually, I wasn't even camping at the time. I was just eating food on the tracks, but they came up and caught
eating
us.
Eating food on the tracks. That's a very dangerous activity.
Yeah, but by my understanding, those tracks aren't very active except for around Christmas time.
No,
or
I mean,
something.
It's dangerous to the public safety. You're being there, feeding yourself, creating more of a menace possibly tomorrow. Who knows what you might do downtown. Well-fed people can be dangerous people.
Right, yep.
And also ill-fed people can be dangerous people. So it's a difficulty in either case. Best thing you need is to leave town immediately.
It seems like it, actually. Last year they were much more lenient. This year it's just like, really on you. Kind of sucks. Had a ticket for my dog and everything. And I have service work for her.
When did you get the ticket for your dog?
4 days ago. Just because she didn't have a medallion. I didn't realize California has a rule with that.
Do they have a rule with that?
I guess. I'm more from, like, Illinois. And that when I got the service work done for her, they didn't give me a medallion. So
it is a dog, a service dog. Presumably, if you took it into court, bring the dog into court and have her lick the face of the judge.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and clear that up. There's no reason for the ticket for that one.
Grab some coffee if you want.
What?
So the sleeping ticket that you got, or so-called sleeping ticket, you say you were eating when it happened. Can you describe what went down?
We were just kind of hanging out there. We saw the officers on the tracks, but we didn't really think anything of it. I didn't realize there's any ordinances. And they walked up. I was like, hey. And they're like, are you guys camped out right here? And we had our gear. They were like, yeah. And at that point, the one lady actually got like, I was standing up giving my ID to the cop, and she freaked out. I was like, sit down now. I was like, wait, what? And I started to, but she kicked the can opener we had, and she was freaking out over it. Like, I don't know. She got very scared about a can opener right there.
She's aware of the danger of a well-fed individual of your ilk. So
right.
That's really, you know, you got to realize, try to be move more slowly and ask, say, yes or may I at every point, particularly yes, ma'am. In that
right.
Case.
I mean, I'm pretty good at just, handling things, but they're a little stingy about things. I mean, I gave them my ID. I was pretty polite, and it's just like, I don't know, a little aggravation when she... I didn't even realize can opener was right there, but she got pretty aggressive.
So how many of you were there, and how many police officers or rangers or whatever?
There are three of us, two rangers and two officers were there. And the two officers dealt it. I mean, the rangers were nice, but the officers were the ones who were on our ass about it. So try to see if they'd give us a slack. We just came in town, and it rained that day. I mean, it was raining outside. We didn't really want to just sleep anywhere. And so... I don't know. They're like, yeah, sorry. It's an ordinance. You're getting a ticket. No slacks here. So my friend Paul wasn't even camping there. He was just there to eat, and they gave him a ticket for it, too.
Well, again, he has a questionable appearance. Notice the rip in his pants. I mean, we have a fashion code here in town, if you don't mind, okay? All right, then.
Sorry.
Again, we've been talking with...
My name's Ronnie. Ryan Phillips.
Thank you, Ronnie, and I appreciate your doing this even with your mouth full. I'm going to be back when you're finished. We can fill out something once you're finished eating.
All right, sweet. Thank you.
All right. So here we have a man and his nice-looking pooch. What's the name of your dog?
Cinnamon. She's a Brussels Griffon from France.
Wow.
Very rare. She's worth $3,000. If I didn't get a picture, we were six, the guy told me about.
And very friendly, it looks like.
She's a very loving little... And she helps me with my suicidal thoughts. I've already tried to kill myself 8 months ago. Shot myself in the head with a .22 pistol. Ended up like a real pain in the butt.
And you're still feeling pretty suicidal?
No, but I get awful pissed off now.
Yes,
but she keeps me, you know, she keeps me under control.
She's
good.
A sweet dog. Look at that.
Yeah.
Look at that.
She'll sit right down and talk to you.
Yeah.
You know, they had my wife in jail for like 7 months, and they were laying around in jail during the week like 4 or 5 times. So she'd be going out doing more drugs and keeping herself more mentally ill, doing crystal meth. My marriage is about gone to shit because it... and they do that on purpose, so she will stay mentally ill, and they can put her in at the state hospital, and that's where she is right now, 400 miles away.
What's her name?
Her name is Patricia Turner, but they gave her a name, Teresa Lee Larish. Isn't her name at all.
So you and the reason, of course, I'm talking with you because I want to hear what you have to say here, which may be more important than what I'm asking about, which is...
No, you're doing them there.
You say you've gotten some citations?
Yeah, for parking and... I can't think what else, but... I haven't got anything for camping or anything like that.
That's good. Do they let you...
I used to be in a heavy metal rock band back in the 80s, and the police used to be my fans, so these cops, and so they treat me pretty good.
That's good.
You know, police officers don't know about my band,
Well, they see that you're a vet, right?
Yeah.
So, let me ask you, are police, in essence, do they find you camping and say, it's okay, no problem?
If it's raining, they don't usually mess with you too much, you know? But when it's not raining, they can mess with you.
What do you observe in terms of police behavior toward other people who are outside?
Well, the same kind of thing. You know, if you're in the wrong spot and it ain't raining, and they'll be talking to you, you know. But, you know, they got like 5,000 homeless people here, and they ain't got enough shelter for them, you know. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, sure, words were not spoken, at least not this morning. What do you want the community to know about what's going on in Santa Cruz if you...
As far as the numbers of homeless people go, don't have any clear indication, but I estimate 1,500 to 2,000 in the city and thousands more in the county. So 5,000 is probably low for the county, but high for the city. So, but again, you know, who knows? So you have these census reports that are also inaccurate because they're done in the middle of winter and they don't really deal with the people who can't be found, and they're also, I kind of rely also on homeless organizations in other cities that are homeless run that actually characterize these kinds of counts as undercounts.
Had a chance to say it as you do.
They keep people mentally ill, and they keep them in jail as long as possible so they can make, $2,000 to $3,000 a month or something like that, and then they ship them up to a mental hospital, let them get them mentally nice and effective mental illness, and then they're in a state mental hospital, and they make a bunch of money off that, and it's actually a prison, too. It's not just a mental hospital, it's a prison, and they're making tons of money off these people.
And I've heard this claim also by speakers at Sin Barras, Without Bars, the organization concerned with jail abolition, rallies around the Black Lives Matter rise of opposition to police violence that's happened in the last 9 months. And even in Santa Cruz, there have been some rallies. And folks have briefly taken over the streets and held forums under the leadership of Sin Barras and some other groups. And there have been claims by some speakers at those rallies that state authorities and perhaps local authorities too actually get a financial benefit by having someone in jail, particularly since we're talking privatized prisons. I would love to get a clear financial sense of what the financial benefit is to the jail authorities here in Santa Cruz. If anyone has any information on that too, do please call in at 427-3772. That's on air if you want to talk about it during this broadcast, which will go on for another an hour and a half. Or call me on the Huff line at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. I would also suggest you also email me, but the studio Mozilla seems to have crashed, so we're operating without internet today, but we're operating anyway, so there. Let's hear some more from the library, and I believe this man's name is Chris.
They have disabilities, they have drug addicts, and...
How long have you been in Santa Cruz yourself, Jim?
On and off for 20 years.
And has there been any changes that you've noticed you want to comment on?
They ain't changed one bit. This place is terrible, you know. I wish I could... I want to get the hell out of here. But with my wife being locked up where she's at, you know, hopefully I can get her out of there. And then we can move on, you know. It's too expensive here. They make it hard for low-income people because they do not like low-income people. They don't even let that Walmart open up because they don't want to attract low-income people. They were shutting down recycling places because they don't want low-income people around, you know? It's ridiculous. And they don't treat veterans with their crap. You know, I'm constantly hassled by the security guards. And, again, you got this black guy, I've been with the security guard, been following me around all morning.
This fellow just passed by?
Yeah, he just ran me off from City Hall because I'm working on having a job, which I've been doing, is picking up syringes and paraphernalia and stuff at the beaches and at the parks, you know, and all that kind of stuff, so little kids ain't getting into that crap. And that's what I'm going to do. I could do all that for probably $200 a month. It won't cost the city hardly nothing. You know?
James, what did the security guard tell you running you off from City Hall recently?
He said, you can't be here. This is a no trespassing zone and no smoking. I said, I don't see any no trespassing signs.
It's not a no trespassing zone, and it may be a no smoking zone. Were you smoking?
Yeah. I didn't see any no smoking signs around me. There's one right in the front there as you go in, but where I was at, I didn't see any no smoking signs. So I was around the back there.
Did he tell you that if you put out the cigarette, you were allowed to be there or not?
No, he wanted me to move from the area, and I was trying to charge my phone. And
when this cop comes by again, I'm going to try to see who he is so you can identify him for us.
He's not a cop. The cops are way better. These security guards are ridiculous. The security guards do the job, but the cops are.
Yes, what's up, Mitchell? Mitchell Horton, you're the security guard.
I was going to ask you, could you encourage the folks when they come over, if they get something to eat, they keep the stairwell clear so they can keep the handrail clear for seniors and disabled, anyone uses the stairs?
This is the door.
I don't know. I'll think about it. But I'm concerned that you told him this was a no trespassing zone across the street. Did you do that?
Yep.
Did you tell him that? I see you're turning away and not answering me, Mr. First Alarm Security Guy. Can you give me the name of your superior, please? Thank you for not coming back. He's leaving.
And later on in the course of the hour of or longer during these interviews, which was this morning in front of the library, Mitchell Horton, or so his name tag said, did come back. He kept walking by back and forth in his First Alarm uniform. And he later demanded or requested, but there was the force of a threat behind it, the uniform, the attitude. It wasn't that he was rude. He was just, it wasn't a request you would make of another citizen. It's a request which a security guard makes with the force of fear behind it, that another individual move his bags from where they were placed out of the way, but near the door of the library, out onto the sidewalk. What I felt was another unnecessary and harassing move, which might have satisfied his sense of propriety. You may be able to hear, I don't know if I recorded it, apparently Mr. Horton went in and got the head of the library to come out and request that this guy, who I call James as well as Chris, he actually, you know, has several names. I think one was his middle name, one was his first name. I was looking at the ticket that he showed me, I think, that he move away from the rail. This is, and you'll hear me describing this later. This removal of the library, making it a more hostile zone for homeless people, at least some homeless people, is a real cause for, well, it's a cause both for anger and sorrow here in Santa Cruz. It typifies what is going on here, the kind of hostile attitude towards poor people that is being translated into a routine deprivation of rights and treating people like they are on probation or in jail, and they have to be ordered around under threat of force, and if they don't behave, they can be threatened further. I mean, this is the standard situation for people who are outside. If you comply quickly enough and in a nice enough manner, then you know, you can form your momentary relationships with police and security guards, but why should you have to do that?
Okay.
I thought I'd get a gun.
So, that may not be the best approach. Anyway, we've been talking with?
Chris Turner.
Thank you, Chris. I've been calling you James, but you are Chris, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hello?
You could ask him how he likes it.
So an official just came out and told Chris, asked him not to, quote, block the stairway. The stairway, however, includes, I would say it is 6, 12, 18, 24 feet wide. There are three different areas, stairways in front of the library here. And there are four rails. So in theory, if a disabled person came, it would be nice for them to have access to this rail. So I can understand that concern. But you yourself look like you're disabled. This looks like you yourself have a psychological need for this dog, and therefore that means you yourself have a disability or need to be able to use this rail as you are using it. So as far as I'm concerned, both the security guard and the official who came out and advised you not to be here or asked you not to be here in his, you know, do it or else is out of line. Thank you, Chris. But, you know, do what you think best.
Jesus. I never did this till I came to this fucking town. Look at my fucking arm.
And what does that mean for those who can't see it?
I've been shooting fucking dope, and I never did it before in my life till I came to this ticket town. This town fucking makes people mentally ill and junkie. It's terrible what it does to people.
Thank you, Chris.
Yeah.
And a point to be made here is a point made by an activist at Huff who's raised this a number of times, and I think very appropriately, Elise, who's very articulate speaker and has spoken at city council as well, that what may appear to others who are watching and aren't really in touch with what's going on when I first complained about it, there's three other large open areas with rails that are right next to it that people can use. People are put into a situation, it is a pretext to get people to do a number of small things and address, move here, move here, do this, do that. And it has, of course, it exhausts you as you try to fulfill all these minor requirements which are suddenly becoming things with the force of law, or they threaten to remove a privilege or exclude you from the library for not stepping lively enough in library. Now you can be banned if you fall asleep. I've heard different stories about how this no sleeping policy is enforced, but it is a policy, and it does mean you can be banned for a day, a week, a month, or 6 months. That's actually where the stay away order process for the broader parks was taken from, this ridiculous library policy that was created and supported by David Chourassis and Cynthia Matthews, two city council members who I'm not too happy with on this issue and on many other issues as well. Let's take a musical break and come back.
Back to you.
My dog.
Okay. So we're talking with
Scarecrow.
And Scarecrow, you say that you were caught smoking, is that correct?
Yeah, off Cedar and Elm Street, way out in the parking lot underneath a nice big old tree, just trying to admire it.
you wouldn't think much because it's a bunch of cars and exhaust and emissions being blown about in the parking lot. A cigarette wouldn't really give a damn.
And what time of day was it?
Let's see here.
Pulling out your citation, a crumpled yellow bit of paper that you still have with you. You haven't eaten or used it for other purposes yet.
Not yet. Let's see. Times is...
It's at the top of the ticket.
At...
Morning.
1:33 in the afternoon, I think.
And how many police officers were involved in this?
Two.
What did they tell you?
One was a new gal, so I think she was just trying to get her fill in of authority.
You were sort of training material, do you think?
Possibly. The guy, the other officer didn't really seem to, like, want to do paperwork, I guess. Like, just the fact that she was there, he's like, ah, all right, gotta do it, I guess.
And what did they tell you afterward?
Pretty much to kick rocks and go somewhere else to smoke.
I see. Did they offer you a light? Probably not.
Probably not. No, actually, I gave my light away to another friend who was smoking in a car, but you're allowed to smoke within the vehicle with the windows rolled up, but you cannot have them cracked. Otherwise, you will get a ticket.
Actually, if you were in a city parking lot, you're not allowed to be in your vehicle unless you're parking or retrieving it or walking through.
Oh, so then they gave out falsified information.
They were mistaken in what they said. These police officers are really very well-intentioned, as you saw by our security guard walking back and forth, who's not as well-trained as the police officers, perhaps, but has the same pretensions to authority.
And they'd probably cost a whole lot less than an actual officer as well.
That's not likely true. We've been talking with...
Scarecrow.
Thanks, Scarecrow. Should be on free radio tonight. So when speaking to the security guard, I've just he claims he did not state to, I guess it was Chris, that it was a no trespassing area. So there's a discrepancy, and different people have different perspectives on it. Those who listen can make their own judgments as to what the situation is. I wasn't a witness, but you did have an experience with this man.
Yeah, I did have an altercation where I was sleeping over on City Hall and had a fever around December and trying to keep warm. Didn't want to catch pneumonia. And I was told to unblanket myself and put more jackets on because jackets are the way to go in Santa Cruz, not blankets.
I see. What time of day or night did he tell you this? This was this man here?
This is definitely not even before 3 in the afternoon.
Oh, in other words... This individual, who I'm now looking at, and you can see him over there, and who we identified earlier, I don't recall what his name is, starts with an H.
His name, according to his badge, was Mitchell Horton, and he is a first alarm security guard.
He told you that, was he giving you friendly advice, or was he actually directing you not to put a blanket on yourself during the day at City Hall?
It was most likely harassment, because I didn't want the police to get involved, and... He was just looming over me with hatred.
He seemed to be hostile toward you?
Yeah, why would you come up to someone in the first place and be like, hey, if you're cold, take that blanket off. Seems harassment to me.
Well, we can ask him about that. He's standing right over there. Maybe we could do a mediation at this point and see how that works. And I don't mind doing that. As you heard, we just off tape, I had a, as I described, a brief conversation with this first alarm security
Mitchell Horton,
who stated that, you know, first initially after 3 attempts to get him to respond to the question, did he tell someone inaccurately that there was no trespassing on the City Hall grounds across the street, and he said he didn't. But I guess the thing to ask him is something regarding this. So my friend here has a question for you.
In regards to what, sir?
It's regard to something that happened in December when he was sleeping at City Hall.
Was I involved?
He says you were. I don't know if you were or not. And what was your question?
Sleeping with blankets.
He says that you advised him he could not sleep with blankets there during the day, that he had best be advised to use a jacket. And I'm just trying to clarify if that was an accurate account.
I don't recall.
Well, that's fair enough. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I appreciate that.
It's funny how potheads can have a better recognition and memory than people that don't smoke pot.
And I have the same fault as many who want to, you know, smooth things over. And also I was trying to do several things this morning. I was trying to get citations recorded, people putting in claims against the city for the citations, let people have literature, and interview people on what was happening to them. On occasion, I'm more direct and more demanding of particularly officers, because they have the power of force and law and even lethal force behind them. And frankly, with the rising public awareness of widespread abuses of police power, and I think it's happening in Santa Cruz too, both the awareness and, of course, the continuing abuses. If you want to go to Indy Bay, you can find a story and some video of, I can't go in there now because I'm having problems with the internet, but Santa Cruz Indy Media, indybay.org, indybay.org, / Santa Cruz, has a story by Alex DeRosi, several actually, that relate to an incident that happened in October. And this particular more recent update, DeRosi posted a video of an officer beating a man with a baton and another officer kicking at the man. These are police officers, Santa Cruz police officers, is how it seems, although the video is a little hard to follow. It's done from a distance. It's one of those sort of narrow strip videos, but from a cell phone. But these, frankly, are unfortunately the best evidence, and they're certainly better than verbal accounts that we have of this kind of thing when it happens. It's really important for people to pull out their cell phones, to pull out their whatever devices they have, and document what's going on, because that not only is likely to deter police officers from violent behavior, but it will also make it more likely that the community may be moved, and I don't mean the police department. I don't think the police department's going to be moved by anything other than, earthquakes and war, it's hard to say, to actually hold these officers accountable and hold the department accountable and their superiors accountable for the kind of behavior that goes on, unchecked, unadmonished, unpunished, and for victims are uncompensated for this kind of stuff, and the community maintains a general sense of fear and insecurity around police officers, although some people like to fantasize and they're in a more secure position, and maybe some are, depending on your economic status and your emotional relationship with the police officer. I'm admitting that when I would have preferred that I was more direct with Mitchell Horton and allowed more of a real dialogue between Mitchell and Scarecrow, and perhaps I can do that in future interviews when these issues come up.
Well, I don't recall, of course, was the favorite phrase of the president from many years ago, Richard Nixon, who just,
I do not recall,
was what he used to say. So, again, we're talking with
Scarecrow.
And Scarecrow, your recollection of this incident up a flagpole and the blankets and the jacket thing was what? Clear recollection or not?
Yeah, for the most part. I was definitely not intoxicated or under the influence of any other narcotics of any sort. I was sick with a fever.
Could that fever be distorting your memory? Could this be someone else who stopped you?
Oh, no, not at all. We have lots of altercations with this gentleman.
Do you recall any others?
My friend here has actually come forth with a few stories.
Do you recall? So, do you mind being interviewed for free radio?
Sure.
We're talking with
Bryce Redding.
And Bryce, you say regarding the security guard who just passed by, whose name is on this audio earlier,
Mitchell Horton.
He's a familiar figure for you?
Yes, very much so.
And what kind of interactions have you had with him?
Well, he's given me more attitude than any other police officer or first alarm or anything like that. And one day, I recall, I was going to the bathroom over here at the parking garage.
In the bathroom?
Well, I was about to. and I was still smoking my cigarette, which, you know, you're supposed to do off of Pacific, so I was rightfully just smoking my cigarette.
And outside the parking garages,
right.
Mr. Criminal.
Sure, sure. And so I was just beginning my morning having coffee, smoking a cigarette, and going to use the bathroom. And he came up to me and started giving me attitude about simply being there, being a human being, standing there.
What did he say? Do you remember? And first of all, how long ago was this?
Well, this was about, I want to say about a month. Month and a half
Which
ago.
Which parking garage?
The one closest, right here by the library, kind of in between the library and Pacific. Kitty corner
maybe
a little
the
bit.
The Locust, one block down?
Yeah, yeah. And he had basically told me that I was being a loser and that I had nothing else better to do with my life. Right, right. And I told him that I was being a human being and... I was just, you know, trying to get on with my day, and that I wasn't planning on staying there that much longer. I was just doing my business and leaving. And he continued to just get in my face and stare me in the eyes, and until I decided to tell him to have a good day, you know. And he chose to just try to be the most authoritative,
authoritarian,
very authoritarian and disrespectful, and it really just blew my mind how somebody that gets paid by the city could have such leeway to be such a dickhead.
Any other incidents you remember?
No, that's about it for now.
And we've been talking with?
Bryce Redding.
Thanks, Bryce.
You're welcome.
Next to me, does that have the business sign, 471-1130?
And that sounds like me walking with an audio device in my pocket, which happens all too frequently. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. Call-in number here is 427-3772. How are the security guards treating you downtown, around the library, wherever you happen to be, in the parking lots, in the parks? How are the rangers and how are the police treating you? I've gotten some positive reports, and I sometimes pass those on. Frankly, it's of more interest to me when people are not being treated properly, because if they're being treated properly, well, there's nothing to worry about. It's good. It's as it should be. People are acting professionally. It's when they're not acting professionally that you need to kind of shine the spotlight on them. Let's get musical, and I'll be back. Call in number again, 427-3772.
It's against the law to feed homeless. It's against the law to sleep in the park. It's against the law for you to see me. I live outside. I'm against the law. I'm a criminal. Cop, I want to eat. Fuck you, mayor. I live here. Fuck you, law-abiding citizen. You pushed me here. Fuck you, voter. I will never disappear. All your systems will crash one day, and you will crawl to me. We'll be right back.
And now let's turn to the courtroom. On, gosh, I guess it was Tuesday before the protest at City Hall around the Bearcat demanding it be returned and the City Council meeting ignoring the protest around the Bearcat, there was a trial in the basement courtroom of Kim Baskett, who is a commissioner, and it involved Curtis Relaford, who has a Follow Your Heart website and also program in which he gives transports food and clothing, according to his account, to the Native American reservations and also areas of disaster, like the Katrina disaster in Louisiana, the hurricane that destroyed New Orleans, or destroyed New Orleans, the low-income people in there anyway. And he was charged in this case and this trial with amplified sound without a permit. And this is a charge which he's faced a number of times. You'll hear him talk about this. He came to court, as he often does, dressed to the nines in a suit, looking dapper and super conservative. He's a fellow who parks his long, double-long truck vehicles on Pacific Avenue on occasion, particularly during occasions celebrating civil rights events like Martin Luther King Day. He also came to the very free market and was ticketed there for playing amplified music, which people then were dancing to on the sidewalks and enjoying most of them, though some of them felt it was too loud. I talked to later, but they didn't apparently advise him of this. Anyway, this was a citation he got around Christmas, which he's described on the air before. He said he was surveilled all day by police. He turned down his music at their request. They finally came up and told him they were ticketing him, and he, without giving him a chance to turn down his music further. And he felt that he was being racially profiled. He's African American himself. So let's hear a little bit from the corridors of the courtroom. This is in the basement of the county building where Department 10 is. That's the usual infraction court, which I encourage people to avoid by disqualifying Commissioner Kim Baskett. Go to the law library next door, get a 170.6 disqualification form, fill it out, take it upstairs to the clerk, and put your case in another court. That's my advice to anybody with an infraction ticket. But you should do what you feel like doing. Curtis and I and others went through this hands up, don't shoot. Actually, it's hands out as we wand you to make sure you're not bringing lethal weaponry into the court, even though this was not a family court. This is not even a misdemeanor court. This is another ridiculous violation of the privacy and dignity of the public, as far as I'm concerned. I find the entire system of weapons search not just unnecessary, but training for its obedience training for the community to continue allowing more and more invasions of privacy. And I think this has unfortunately been shown to be all too true. Of course, I'm not happy with a number of court processes. One is the demand. We were all given instructions to rise by the bailiff, who gave us a little speech before the white-haired Kim Baskett came striding into court, told how to behave, how to conduct ourselves. This is not something that bailiffs in other courts do. At least it wasn't. I haven't been to other courts recently, so maybe they're adopting this practice there. But it seemed to be an oppressive one. And I rose as little as possible, at which point Commissioner Baskett said to me, "Mr. North, are you going to stand up?" or something to that effect, at which point I wished I'd said, "Commissioner Baskett, I hope I can sit down soon and you can allow us to conduct public business here," which really what needs to be done. These judges need to be demystified and treated as... Well, judges, I think, need to be treated as in a somewhat more hostile manner than I would normally treat the average person I'd meet on the street who, we can always have hopes for them. These judges have a nasty history of denying homeless and poor people rights day after day, week after week, and grinding out fines. But The witnesses against Curtis Relaford, who are cops, and half the courtroom was reserved for the police, which is ridiculous because there were only three police officers there. Sometimes there are a dozen, but there are several dozen seats. And the idea that, you know, half the court should be given to the police department is another example of the kind of undue influence, authority, and prestige and privilege that police officers are given in this city and county and in the court system. So because Curtis Relaford's accusers did not show up, the cop did not show up who gave him the citation, the charges were dismissed. And here is the conversation in the hallway afterward, which I interviewed Curtis and some of the folks who came to support Curtis.
Outside the courtroom of Department 10, Curtis Relaford just had his case dismissed because the police officer didn't show up. Curtis, I'm going to ask you how you feel, but first we have your star witness here who is going to testify. What's your name?
My name's Karen Bork.
And what were you going to testify to?
Well, I was going to say that, I mean, I wrote it down. Curtis, he should not get in trouble for playing his music loud. I know there's a noise ordinance, but what he does is not noise. It's out in the public, spreading peace and love and encouraging people to be good people. And it would have broken my heart if he got in trouble for that, especially in Santa Cruz when there's so much other shenanigans going on. Curtis is the one who's helping our community.
And have you been present when Curtis has been playing music? People have been dancing and listening to it.
The first time I heard Curtis, I was in Los Gatos, where I lived at the time. I now live here. He was driving down the main street in Los Gatos, and he was in his big truck that says peace and love and be kind to others. And he
follow
was,
your heart.
And he was, yeah, and he was playing What the World Needs Now is Love, Sweet Love. And it was loud. And I cheered because I was so happy to see. I didn't know him.
At which point the Los Gatos police immediately pulled him over.
No, they didn't. But and then since then we've moved here, and I've bumped into Curtis lots of times, and he does amazing things for people. Just last week I stumbled across him up at the high school, and he had set up this beautiful presentation for super high risk. Teenagers, and you know, he got out there and he's dancing and he's talking to them with passion you just don't see. And I know he reached those children. I know he did. It was awesome. And Curtis is awesome. He really is. Yeah, he really is. He's not afraid to go out in the world and, you know, take a risk by saying, you know, really loving things, you know. He's not afraid to do that.
And
yeah.
We've been talking with
Karen Bork, B-O-H-R-K.
And what's your name?
Hi, I'm Catherine Byrne.
And Catherine, what brings you here?
I've known Curtis for quite some time, and I know him to be a man of integrity and peace and justice, and he takes a stand where most of us sit home and watch television, and we have the ideas to stand for peace, but he actually does it, and he makes real change, and he provides real services to people who are in need, and I don't think he should be stopped in his tracks in any way, particularly for playing music, loving music and loving people and getting community and showing us all how to do it, really, to take action.
And again, we've been talking with
Catherine Byrne.
Hey, Catherine. Now, Curtis, he's dismissed. Police did officer didn't appear. So this is your, how many tickets have you been issued for amplified sound, lack of a permit?
5 tickets.
And how many of those have you fought in court?
3.
And how many have you won on?
2.
So you've lost on 1, won on 2. That's pretty good. And this one, are you counting this one here as well?
This one would be number 3 because he didn't show up.
Now, did the previous 3 tickets involve officers not showing up or officers? Actually,
no,
they must have shown up.
They was there.
And you beat 2 of those citations?
Yeah.
On what basis did you do that? How did you successfully defend?
Well, I felt being profiled on those because every time the cop was bugging me, I put it on the calendar. I wrote it down. Mm-hmm. That day he bothered me for the meter. It wasn't even 9 o'clock yet. Then the next time he come back, September the 29th, he come back and he's going to tell me about my windshield. and it wasn't that bad. Then he come back right before my trip, looking at my license plate up under my truck, and I'm asking him.
Same officer?
Same officer.
Name of the officer?
So I don't remember his name. He was an older guy downtown. Mm-hmm. But it was the same one, and my landlord told me to write down the dates that he bugged you. And I took him to court, and I called him on it. And he had no recollection of anything. So all the no recollections
added up to reasonable doubt.
Yeah, so that's how I believe I got off of that. But
and this one you came prepared. Did you bring witnesses to previous trials as well? Or?
No.
But this time you did a little public outreach.
I did, yeah.
And I see the officer didn't appear.
Feeling like I'm appearing up in here so much. Mm-hmm. And I got pictures of my performance downtown. So she can see all the kind of signs.
This was in Christmas, this ticket, around the Christmas time it was issued.
Christmas.
A little before Christmas.
Christmas.
How many hours did you take to prepare for this trial?
I didn't spend much time. Well, 6 hours developing these here and just, you know, getting paperwork together.
Now, this isn't your...
I was just coming from my heart. Mm-hmm. I don't have nothing to lie about. And
this isn't your last ticket, right? You have one more you have to... You got a ticket last Sunday, right? A week ago Sunday.
Yeah, at the...
For the same thing.
Music for the...
Amplified sound.
Yeah, for...
It was an unreasonably... that was the...
Food Not Bombs.
Yeah, really free market was...
Food Not Bombs. And the people were just engaging. And the conversation with the people that was engaging... Kurt, I was so depressed before you came up here and I saw this music and started dancing. I'm out of that depression. Two guys want to fight. They stopped, broke up because of the music. You know, and everybody was just having a real...
Sounds like a subversive influence to me.
Yeah, and so that's what I'm going on. And it's number one, that music get all the donations I get. The donations, the people that come, that want to go with me, want to do things for what I'm doing, taking food and clothes to the poorest of the poor. Mm-hmm. That's why I play that music. I done met a grant writer, and I done met a book editor. I meet you all, and I mean, that's why I play the music.
Yeah, it's a good reason.
The kind of people that it draws.
Well, I posted you on the
Pat Colby
Protest Santa Cruz County, which has 500, almost 600 members. I hope you guys will join. And I posted you on the Santa Cruz community to tell people to come and support, because I think you're a gem. Mm-hmm.
So, Pat, you brought some evidence to court that you were going to try to show?
This is off of Annalisa Cube's page, where she's talking about those protesters that...
Annalisa Cube is the co-founder of Take Back Santa Cruz.
And she talks about grabbing her megaphone and protecting the police garden from the students, because I guess, you know, she thinks they're going to trample that garden. And unfortunately, my brother did a FOIA, a public record request for all the permits for people to have amplified sound, and they've only issued one. And I know, like, for evidence next
one
time.
One in how long?
I think he checked for like 3 years.
Because I know, Curtis, you said you received a sound permit for one of your, for the Martin Luther King Day. Did you apply for one?
Number three permits I applied for and paid for.
Yes.
And they cut me off. They turned me off. They shut me down.
Did you actually get permits?
Yeah, paid the money for it.
So these other people didn't get permits, like Drew Glover for his Black Lives Matter. Mm-hmm. I've seen... what other protesters have we seen using?
Well, there have been many Black Lives... There have been many different marches in the last six months around racial discrimination, which have not... As far as I know, of course, I didn't see whether they had permits, but they had amplified sound. But you, on three occasions, was it on those occasions that you were brought into court for not having a permit when you actually did have a permit, or was it another charge in these...
Another
you
mentioned, charge.
What was the other charge?
It was after the cops told me I need to get a permit. And I went and got the permit.
Right. And then, so you on but three occasions you've gotten a permit? One occasion?
Three occasions I got a permit.
And on any of those occasions, were you given a ticket after you'd gotten a permit?
No.
So you play, how many times would you estimate you played on the streets the kind of music that upsets some of the police officers or some people complaining through them?
I've been doing this for 7 years.
And how many times a year would you say you do it?
Oh, Robert, God.
Give me a guess. Once a month, twice a month, five times a month?
About, I would say about four times a month.
Okay. So, play on Curtis.
Yeah.
Anybody have any other thoughts that they want to say?
What's the name of the no-show police officer?
We don't know.
Ah, what was his name?
You have your ticket with you?
Be able to look it up. Maybe it's on the
looking for trouble.
List.
Perhaps.
But it's on that list.
So what's your name?
My name's B.
And B, what brought you here?
Curtis. Yeah.
And you're a support person. You're a witness. You're
a beacon of light in the community.
How did you meet Curtis?
I met Curtis on Front Street. Yeah.
Dancing, perhaps?
No, I'm just listening to Change Is Gonna Come.
Fair enough. And we've been talking with
B.
Thanks, B. Yeah. Becky, do you have anything you want to say?
Where's this going, Rob?
Free radio.
Oh, radio.
Any media?
Well, I could do that, but it's going to go directly to my radio show and maybe link.
The guy who started Cop Watch?
Andrea Pritchard is the woman who started Cop Watch, in Berkeley anyway.
There was a guy on roller skates in Phoenix, Arizona, and he was attacked by police officers, and they said that's how they started the Cop Watch. That's how the Phoenix Cop Watch
I expect you to start the Santa Cruz Cop Watch again, because we've seen it started numerous times. All right. Becky, anything you want to say?
It was B. Burrell is the name of the officer.
How do you spell that?
B-U-R-R-E-U-L.
Oh, so not this B.
Another B. This B was tried to sting you, but apparently didn't take.
Well, Rob, thank you, man. Thank you so much for showing up. Thank you all for showing up. Thank you.
So
if
that happens,
it's
a copy of that.
And that was the scene in the corridors outside Department 10 in the basement of the county building where Curtis Relaford had charges dismissed against him for amplified sound for being at the Food Not Bombs Really Free Market, I think it was a Sunday before last. I think so. And getting cited. Maybe it was last Sunday. I'm a little bit unclear. Let's go musical again, and I'll be back.
Against the law. At San Francisco City Hall, the latest skirmish has...
And think that was another by Five, Food Not Bombs. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. Still broadcasting, but for how long, I don't know. Find us a site to put up our antenna so we can continue broadcasting. Give a call to 423-4833 if you have any ideas. It could be anywhere in the Santa Cruz area, Santa Cruz City area, even out towards 7th or 17th, or up toward the university even. Get in touch, 423-4833, if you like this kind of programming or if you think other programs on Free Radio are worth listening to. And call in if you have any thoughts on anything you've heard or more information to give about the subjects that we're discussing. I actually was able to get the internet working temporarily here. It seems to be regularly crashing, so I don't know how long it's going to continue. I was sent an email from the Huffington Post. The slaughter continues, 176 civilians killed by police so far in 2015. 176 civilians were killed by police in January and February, according to news clippings collected by killedbypolice.net. Of course, the greatest outrage of all is that no one really knows how many people are killed by police annually. FBI Director James B. Corney said last month, "You could tell me how many people, the absolute number, bought a book on Amazon. It's ridiculous. I can't tell you how many people were shot by police in this country last week, last year, the last decade. Most people killed by police are not armed with a gun. Only a small fraction of perpetrators are killed during or after a gunfight. The people killed by police are generally not nice guys. They are deranged with mental problems, drug addicts, drunks, car thieves, shoplifters, vagrants, wife beaters, punks of all kinds, and generally up to no good. But they don't deserve to die. A typical example is the shooting of Antonio Zambrano Montes, a depressed father of two who worked in an orchard near Pascal, Washington. A few weeks ago, police got a 911 call of a man throwing rocks at cars. When they arrived, the suspect ran away. The video is very clear and shows three cops chasing him for a while, yelling for him to stop. Finally, Zambrano Montes becomes exhausted. After running in circles and eluding the cops, he stops and turns back to the chasing cops as if to give up, raising his hands, no weapon in sight. The three cops are about 20 feet away and shoot Zambrano Montes 6 times in the chest. The video, which shows that he was clearly not in immediate danger to the police, is shocking, but cases like this are almost always ruled as justifiable homicide. And you can find more about this going to the Huffington Post and looking up the story, or go to the killedbypolice.net site. And thanks to Troublesome Thomas Levitt for sending me that story and that link. There is a, currently at the Resource Center for Nonviolence, there is a forum going on, a discussion of community organizing, Suturing Patterns of Struggle, it's called. And there are various guest presenters. Irene O'Connell is a youth empowerment coordinator with Barrios Unidos and a nonviolence educator at the Resource Center for Nonviolence. I have mixed feelings toward Irene, who I really felt impressed with when she boldly walked up to the microphone on December 9th at City Council after the mayor tried to shut down things and demanded to be heard, risking an arrest and a ticket for disrupting a meeting, although she had a lot of support, and that would have been unwise. That was the meeting that ultimately got shut down with cries of shame from the next individual, who was Keith McHenry, who was co-founder of Food Not Bombs in 1980 and has written books including Hungry for Peace, How You Can Help, and Poverty and War with Food Not Bombs. Numerous people were shouting shame. Keith was just one of them, but he was a real voice there. And the behavior of those individuals fighting, this was around the Bearcat issue, the armored tank that the police are touting as a rescue vehicle and slipped past the community through behind closed doors with the help of Representative Farr, who is may now be having second thoughts, but isn't taking any real action to make changes here in this whole matter other than a letter of leaving it up to the city council, which is what was read by four or more SCRAM activists who were filling the oral communications time on Tuesday with their message, which I think is, I certainly approve of their message. I do not approve of the idea of screwdrivering and shoehorning their way into an oral communications period that then left five or six other people unable to speak. Although I'm familiar with that. Homeless activists did that in 1988 extensively. What they needed to do was demand that the oral communications time be expanded. But the SCRAM group seems to have become tamed, and they perhaps have had their impact because the city council has announced, or at least Sherry Connable of the SCRAM coalition has announced, that the SCRAM will be, that the city council will be holding a its next meeting on March 24th will be at the Civic Auditorium in order to accommodate more people so that they can actually broadcast the sound outside, which they have not been doing in meeting after meeting, in essence excluding people from discussions when the room is full, as it was, I think, on December 9th and January 13th. Those two meetings where the people came in mass to oppose the Bearcat. But there's no guarantee that the agenda item is not about sending back the Bearcat. The agenda item is about techniques for procedures for maintaining and training people around the Bearcat, I believe. I haven't seen the agenda. It hasn't been posted. That's my understanding. It's being claimed as a victory by Sherry Connable, and indeed, it's good to get the city council focusing on this issue. But it's taking its own sweet time about this, and I suppose maybe that's in a way, all to the good, because this, as Keith McHenry has said, is a very potent issue for the community. The symbol of an armored personnel carrier rolling around the streets of Santa Cruz is not a pretty one, particularly when we have pictures of it happening in Ferguson going after African-American protesters. There, of course, were two cops shot in Ferguson today. I haven't really heard much more about that. I'll perhaps be able to discuss what's going on. I hope this does not intimidate peace activists throughout the country, and black lives and all lives matter and homeless lives matter activists who are demanding the kind of changes on the streets that are not to be acquired through genteel conversations with Mayor Don Lane behind closed doors, or elitist activities by groups that want to exclude those who are, urging more militant action. Anyway, at this forum tonight, it's Irene O'Connell, Keith McHenry, also Abby Samuels, who is an activist who you can often see serving food at Food Now Bombs and has done a lot of work on presentations around the Bearcat. And then there's Drew Glover, who's the director and founder of Project Pollinate. Unfortunately, I'm afraid these people did not raise their voices to block the exclusion of Huff from the SCRAM coalition. But they are, in their own right, good activists in terms of what they're doing. And you might want to check out the activities at the RCNV, which started at 6:30, and I think they're still going on. Probably go on for another, probably until 9, although maybe until 8:30. It's not clear from this simple flyer. So I'm going to see if I can find anything else here now that I've got this. Let's see here. Not much else about that. But, let's see here. So, let's now listen to some of the Tuesday interviews, discussion, and ultimately the city council oral communications period, during which there were some really good speakers on the issue of why the city council should send back the Bearcat, and unfortunately, they spent a lot of time trying to use Representative Sam Farr's letter as a kind of a wedge or a battering ram or a we have a mainstream support, everybody. We aren't a bunch of radicals. We have Representative Farr is even on our team, but I don't think Representative Farr is on their team or on our team, because we are together on this issue, even if they are excluding us, those of us in Huff who have been working on this issues as long as or longer than many of the people who are in the SCRAM coalition. And, you know, we need to work together, we need to focus on the local issues, and we need to do so by going after the parts of city government that are colluding with the agencies that maintain the structure of police violence in Santa Cruz, the structure of lack of transparency, the structure of lack of accountability, not just in police department, but in the other departments in the community, which I often talk about, ranging from departments that are potentially threatening people who live in their vehicles, threatening people who are running services for poor and disabled people like MH Can by attacking those services, trying to challenge any expansion of their hours. People who are attacking church services, such as the Red Church's Meals program or the Circles Church's programs last fall, which were shut down by pressure from NIMBYs and bigots in the area, as well as from the overflow of people that were driven there into these church programs by the disgracefully intensified harassment against homeless people, which Huff is attempting to document by going to City Hall and reviewing the massive number of citations and unconstitutional stay-away orders that are being used to terrify, terrorize, and drive away the poor in Santa Cruz, to give them the message, so to speak. Let's hear some of that. Again, we're going to the Tuesday, March 10th, I guess we're talking, City Council meeting, and we're going to be listening to, this is out in the courtyard, at a Food Now Bomb Scram table where I was covering for Keith McHenry and Abby Samuels and any other Scram people, because even though I'm excluded, I'm a part of what's going on anyway, and it's even though Huff is excluded, we're a part of what's going on, and we make our own decisions. The Food Not Bomb / Scram table at City Hall, and it is the 10th of March, 2015. There's a city council meeting in progress. It's a Tuesday, and it's around a little after 4, a little before 4, actually. I'm talking with old-time and new-time activist Kim Argula. I called her Candlelight Kim in the old days because by candlelight, she and other activists helped take over buildings that actually were saved. The old police department building, which became the Heiner House, was something that you and others took over. And it's actually not far from where we're standing.
Yeah, we did that a while back. That was really fun. There was a bunch of people I remember sleeping on the floor, and I came in the middle of the night, and they requested that I do a really quick media press release, and I was fortunate enough to be working for a nonprofit, and we had a wonderful press list, contact list that was really expedient. We could just like snap it out in no time. So I did that evening, since the action was so spontaneous, and the media showed up immediately, and so it got a lot of coverage just before the activists were all evicted. So it was really good. So I think that's why Robert like called me Candlelight Kim, because we got the light on that really quick.
Yeah. I know initially you had some doubts about it. There was a broader movement that was occupying Josephine Street out at near Stapleton's, where that is now. It was an area that became a homeless garden. It was an area where Food Not Bomb served throughout the mid 90s, and it was the Caltran property was taken over by activists. I think you might have been involved in that too. I was,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we were arrested for that. We were arrested for the taking over the Heiner House. I don't know how far the Caltran property thing went, but nobody was convicted of anything. Charges were eventually dropped.
This was in 1993. 22 years ago. But it is an example of how direct action gets the goods. The Heiner House was an area that was the old police station. It's about half a block from where City Hall is now, and what is now, I guess, part of the City Hall parking lot. The city wanted to destroy the Heiner House. We activists wanted to make sure it was saved, and it was, as a structure for low-income, I think, families. The other Josephine occupation that happened at the same time with the Union of the Homeless, which was organized initially by Anders Kaur, who was a firebrand activist and a strong advocate of nonviolence. All of us were advocates of nonviolence, pretty much. We occupied an area out near Caltran, which is now part of the Gateway Shopping Center, and then for years had a garden there. Our point was to oppose the sleeping ban and to make it clear that we needed legal places for people to sleep. And it got publicity. It actually, I think, was helpful in maintaining and expanding the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, which was a campground area that was set up after earlier protests. It wasn't really set up. It was tolerated. It was called the Back 40. It's where at the intersection of Highways 9 and Highway 1, where the Page Smith Community House is now, as part of the Coral Street, as part of the 115 Coral Street complex of what they call the Homeless Service Center, what I call the Homeless Lack of Services Center. And people slept there by the dozens, by the scores, and even several hundred eventually slept there until it was a combination of a rainstorm and a brainstorm by Mike Rotkin, then mayor of Santa Cruz, and a betrayal by the Citizens Committee for the Homeless under Paul Lee, Paul Fotenhauer, and others essentially sold out the campers group. I think Sherry Connable and I were working on that issue together, or if not together, in parallel at that particular point, trying to defend the camp. And we got commitments from the Citizens Committee for the Homeless not to move on the camp, which they betrayed, which frequently happens. Native Americans are really familiar with this process, and so are poor people. Anybody who doesn't have power is likely to find themselves on the shit end of the stick. Kim Argula was a part of that, and it's good to see her back again. It was good to see her on Tuesday, and she's talking some more on these issues. And let's hear more about what she had to say. Again, this was at City Hall 2 days ago.
Drop before trial, although, you know, you had to deal with the possibility. But here you are again, and you worked with Food Not Bombs and Homes Not Jails, and then, of course, then some, Hungry Women United and other groups like that?
Well, I came back to Santa Cruz from the Hawaiian Islands and found myself without a place to stay, and stayed someplace temporarily, but realized that I really couldn't afford to pay rent right away. And so I thought, well, maybe I'll resurrect Homes Not Jails, since it's not really active right now.
Now, the current time. Right. We skipped ahead to 2015. Good. Okay.
Yeah,
right.
We're in 2015, and there really isn't a Homes Not Jails in Santa Cruz, but it would be great to start one again. And I feel like I'm a much more mature activist at this point, so it might be a little bit easier. So just started, like, looking around town and seeing what buildings were vacant. Although you have to be a bit careful because... Abby informed me that there's a neighbor watch type group that's video surveillance.
Take Back Santa Cruz.
Yeah, so I think that's kind of important for people to know because I may have already risked myself in that area. But I did find a house, and it was way out on the west side, very remote near the railroad tracks, not really many neighbors, really ideal situation. Was able to get into the house and sleep in the main room in the back for a good 3 weeks or so. It had some electricity, which was really nice. And I was able to get the water turned on just by simply using a water key on the main line in the front. And I learned that from Robert Flory.
Oh, Criminals United.
Yeah. Anyway, not too difficult to do. But I did go down and put the water utility in my name, and I'm not sure if that was a good move or not, and I'm not sure what exactly happened, but I had the water in my name for maybe a week at most. I was able to use the toilet and one utility sink. The rest of the plumbing needed a lot of work.
All you alone, nobody else?
Well, later on I got some help, but I think that kind of triggered the neighbors, and that's what kind of triggered the end of the squat. I did want people to help me, and Homes Not Jails advocates that you use, like, construction workers, you know, like people dressed up like construction workers to kind of help you clean up the property so that
you can disguise what you're doing.
You look like you're official, you know, when you do these things, and so you're kind of easing yourself into the neighborhood, and unfortunately, the helper I had time, but the police were not as friendly. No.
Did they say they were there at the behest of the landlord or the neighbors?
They didn't say what they
were. They bullied you out of the place, in other words.
Pretty much. Yeah, I had to have my stuff out immediately, and it was on the sidewalk. So I wanted another day to get out, and the landlord gave me that sense that I'd have that day, but the cops did not like that at all. So they wanted my stuff out on the street, and luckily I was packed up and ready to go, and everything worked out okay. And Keith, Food Not Bombs was able to let me use the truck to get the stuff out. But that was kind of the end of that, and then the construction workers moved in, put boards on all the windows, and now I'm sure the house is rotting inside from the inside out.
Well, capitalism at work.
Excuse me?
Capitalism at work.
Yeah, capitalism at work. It's kind of ridiculous, It's like a woman alone, homeless, keeping herself safe inside a house that's relatively, safe. It has windows, everything, had water and electricity. And here there's these cops that feel so proud of themselves for kicking me out. And where do they think I'm going to go, I mean, I'm going to go out in the woods and basically, make myself vulnerable to, other people that want to take advantage of me and, either by stealing my stuff or otherwise. And so I just don't know what the police officers are thinking to be so rude. They think I'm rude because I'm upset because they're kicking me out.
They have their orders.
Yeah. Yeah, they were pretty... I wasn't impressed with Officer Hansen. I felt like he could have been a little bit more diplomatic in his handling.
How many police were involved?
Just two.
Officer Hansen and...
I don't remember the other one. The construction workers were really nice. I think that when you do a Homes Not Jail Squad, if any construction workers show up, you want to make sure you take care of them, because they're likely to be your allies in the future if you ever wanted to come back to the squad.
Now, was this your first squad in decades? Because I know you did a squad in a flyer I just handed you from 20 years ago, and you were tried you and Robert Flory, Red Top Robert, as they used to call him. Have you done much in the last 20 years around this?
Well, I did some camping in Maui, which was really good. But, mostly camping. I mean, when Robert Flory and I were together, we used to go and sleep in different houses. And some were just like for a night, and some were for, a few days. There was one up on King Street that lasted, almost a month. And that was good. But I think the key thing is that... it was suggested to me to not damage the house, to do as little damage as possible. I think that's really important, although it didn't really seem to matter to the landlord. It didn't matter how clean I made it. He just didn't want me there. So I don't know. We're exploring, how to make things work better, as a Homes Not Jails kind of starter group. And I'm interested in that, how do you actually make it work? And maybe it doesn't work. Maybe you just move from one house to the next. So these are just things that we could talk about as a new group if we ever, formed one in Santa Cruz.
Now, Kim, I kind of bushwhacked you with this recording. Are you comfortable, do you think, having this played on free radio Thursday night?
Sure. Yeah, no problem.
Okay. Are you interested in, if you're interested in forming a Homes Not Jails group, do you want to give any contact email or anything, information, or people could call the Huff line and they could pass on the word to you however you'd like it?
Yeah, they can call the Huff line, and Robert can pass the information on to me.
Okay, the Huff line is, of course, 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF, 423-4833, all in beautiful area code 831. And we've been talking with...
Kim.
Thank you, Kim.
Thank you, Rob.
So on March 20...
And before we hear about the March 20-whatever... I will remind you that you're listening to Free Radio at 101.3 FM, freakradio.org, and here's a little melodious music to ease you down from that last lengthy bit of information. ¶¶ And let's hear some more from interviews right before the City Council's oral communication period last Tuesday.
Fourth, I'm being told there is two meetings, one of the Board of Supervisors and one
in all the cities, but I don't know all the dates.
And so sometime on the 24th, there's going to be the 10-year plan and homelessness.
To Board of Supervisors.
To Board of Supes and
yes.
And the Santa Cruz City Council. Okay. And the City Council is 2:30, Board of Supes probably at 9 o'clock. I'm sitting here at the Food Not Bombs Graham table. J.M. Brown, the discharged Sentinel reporter, is back.
But let me just make a comment about this upcoming March 24th. Report on a new 10-year plan to end homelessness, or general plan to end homelessness, or a plan to plan to plan to plan to plan to end homelessness, or whatever the latest horse shit is, masquerading as some kind of meaningful step forward. I've had a long kind of go-arounds with activist Linda LeMaster on this when she's called in. She's a person who's tried to give us more information about smart solutions and other programs such as Housing First and 180-180, and I can tend to blur these all blur together in my mind as the latest attempt to get grant writers scrambling for money and give city councils an out as they criminalize homeless people more and more and claiming that, oh, we're actually trying to get people into service programs. So, but there are, if for those interested in these programs, in this latest plan, I believe it was mentioned at length by Linda LeMaster in previous discussions we've had on the air about it. She's a woman who headed the Homeless Issues Task Force more than a decade ago and continues to write about the issue on her Facebook page, as a lot of people write about stuff on different Facebook pages. I have a hard time keeping up with most of it. It's coming up on the 24th, both at City Council and at the Board of Supes. Also coming up at the Board of Supes, of course, is the crackdown on marijuana growers, which I will be talking about probably more in greater depth, or again, I think we've covered it, but probably needs to be covered again. We're still we're spread thin trying to find out whether the 14 dispensaries in Santa Cruz County actually provide real low-income access, and I don't know if that's the case. If you have any information about that, I think we've looked at a couple of them. I think two out of the 14 have been researched by one of our Huff researchers herself, formerly a marijuana grower. I don't know if she may well still be a marijuana grower, as far as I know, from another county. Anyway, March 24th is coming up for a final vote. Restrictive laws that will force people to grow indoors, which is much more expensive, and cuts out the small growers. And also, essentially, I understand somehow it favors large growers, and it also heavily restricts the areas where you'll be allowed to grow at all. And I'll be talking more about that. There's a meeting every Wednesday night at 7 o'clock, I believe, at the Loudon Nelson, the Cannabis Alliance. That's not quite the name. There's another word in there somewhere. But you go to Loudon Nelson on Wednesday night, and you'll be able to hear their updates. There's one more meeting before the next March 24th meeting. March 24th is also the City Council's meeting in the Civic, where they actually say, according to Don Lane, and no reason not to believe him here, there's a lot of pressure to do this, that the Bearcat, the armored personnel vehicle, will be on the agenda as an item as to how can we best maintain and train people to use this fine machine or some such thing. In other words, it's not going to be on the agenda as something to be sent back with covered with tomatoes or whatever. So, that's March 24th. Let's hear some more from City Hall. Oh, actually, before we do, in the studio with me is Doc Mike, who has a Monday and Tuesday show concerning medical and meditational matters. He's also recovering from a heart attack or heart problems at the Homeless Lack of Services Center. And he has his little Homeless Service Center ID card around his neck. they haven't yet put into his, you know, initials of a big H in his forehead yet, but maybe that's to come. We have a caller, though, first. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert, this is Glenda, and I was listening to you. And I wanted to make an offer, although I don't have a fixed time and place for it. But regarding this plan that I would garble the title of, just as you did,
right,
because it doesn't make sense, for trying to unify and improve services to homeless people and get money for those things, whatever we want to call it, I can get a copy of the plan if anybody wants to, like, comb through it with me.
Mm-hmm.
And kick it around together before the 23rd, and I'd be happy. I might be able to do it on a weekend afternoon, like if I got some help with transportation near Food Not Bombs, or we could do it in the community room where I live.
Sure, that could be done. I'm wondering, maybe you might want to do is find a way to put it online so people could comment on it, and that would be a way of doing it from people's computers, you know, without even having to meet with you, although you can also, of course, arrange something for a meeting here.
Other than me would have to put it online, and I imagine that the United Ways newsletter, or what do you call it, website, it's probably just got put up there, and if it isn't, it will be by Saturday or Sunday, but I really can't operate very well that way. But
well, maybe what you can do, Linda, is once you learn where it is on the United Way website, either email me or call in on Sunday when we do a morning show, 9:30 to 1, and let us know where people can reach it.
You're not hearing me.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm not going to promise you or anyone to do anything on it.
Okay, that's fine.
Internet anytime in the next few days.
No, I suggested you call the show and advise people if it is on the internet through the United Way. That was what I was suggesting.
Find out. That's who you should suggest that to.
I'm sorry?
I'm not going to have that information. I can't do that.
Okay, well, that's fine. But people may, if anybody's interested, they might want to check the United Way website and get in touch with Linda and get in touch with me on Sunday if people want to do that. I frankly don't think it's worth, I think the amount of time we've already spent talking about it is too much time. But, you know, I understand that you think differently. So tell me what your thoughts are.
Well, I'm not saying I'm taking a position on this plan yet, although I did my best to try to help draft it. I was in on most of those conversations, not the last month, sadly. But I'm trying to put myself out as best I can. I'm poor and crippled, to share what this large group of bureaucrats and government people have come up with before that date on the 23rd, where two civic entities, one of which will be responsible for receiving any HUD money if this plan is approved, get to look at it publicly. It'll be the first formal look.
I understand. Okay, well, then you've made that announcement here. Do you want to give a contact number for yourself, or how do you want to arrange this?
We can put my email address over, and if I could use your number like Kim did to get people that need to use the phone, I'll get back to them.
Okay,
what I'm trying to say is if they want to look at it or pick my brains, whatever that's worth, we can make that happen before the 23rd.
Okay, so if anybody wants to review this plan before I understand it's the 24th, according to what I...
24th, you're right. I'm
you know,
sorry.
They're, that, you know, they can, you can certainly leave a message at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and I'll inform Linda, leave your number and your name, and she may get in touch with you. Anything else you want to report, Linda, that has come up that you think we should know about?
No, I can't even think. I've had a tiring day. But I want to encourage people to let the county board and let the city of Santa Cruz public safety so-called freaks know what you think, whether you have a chance to read it or not. I'm just trying to put it out in case someone wants to see what's in it.
All right. Well, thank you for that, and we'll leave it there.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So, yeah, as you hear, I'm not at all patient with any kind of conversation about plans to end homelessness. I think it's a complete dead end, and I don't like wasting any time on it or treating it with any kind of seriousness. But there are those who think otherwise. So give a call to 423-HUFF if you want to get in touch with Linda, who is a very lucid and creative thinker on these issues and has put many hours into this and prior efforts, and gone to many, many meetings, and too damn many meetings as far as I'm concerned. She's been sadly wasted in that regard, in my view. But there's not much time left. We have about 5 minutes until Uncle Dennis comes battering into the studio. And so I'll play a little bit more from the Tuesday meeting where we were. I was staffing the Food Not Bombs scram table in spite of being excluded from scram. You know, I have nothing against the people in Scram as individuals. I just think it's a very bad idea, and it's very petty and very... Anyway, been to it too many times. So, but let's hear some more interviews from that that whole kind of pre-meeting protest that was happening.
And I'm not sure what he's doing. He seems to be working on his iPhone or iPod. Jerry Connable's about to speak. Down with the Bearcat. WWF. And we have a relatively small turnout so far, about 425. We're talking about 10, 20, 25 people, maybe 30, 35. Let's be generous. I've been...
sit down